My name is Mike Rowe, and this is my job.
Very slow.
Oh my God.
I explore the country looking for people who aren't afraid to get dirty.
Hey, Mike, come on out to NASA. See the space shuttle.
Hard-working men and women who earn an honest living.
I'm exhausted.
Doing the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible for the rest of us.
Close. Come on. That was right on the money.
Dead on.
Close. Now, get ready to get dirty.
Coming up on Dirty Jobs, the American Society of Civil Engineers has given our country an infrastructure report card. It's not pretty. Near failing grades in most every category. In this special episode of Dirty Jobs, we give tribute to the men and women who fight the uphill battle working on our country's infrastructure.
How high does the water get when you still work?
Up to our chest.
Soldiers in a dirty, heroic struggle that can never be won.
Up on the load!
Against the forces of nature and a disintegrating universe, keeping our bridges from falling down, our roads from falling apart, and our toilets from blowing up in our faces.
See, that's way too much toilet paper.
Fighting the good fight to make life just a little bit better for you and me.
Welcome to hell.
Oh, God. Ah, junior high. Doesn't this bring back a rush of unpleasant memories? For me, anyway. The eighth grade, in particular. A very difficult time. There was a lot of detention, there was a suspension, and there was a girl. Or as my mother liked to call her, a distraction. Naturally, with all these extracurricular activities, my normally impressive scholastic record took a bit of a tumble. And when my father got a look at my eighth grade report card, his reaction was not entirely unpredictable. He ripped the television set out of the wall by the cord. He made me quit the baseball team, and he sent me to my room for about a month. In hindsight, probably the best thing he ever did for me. And that's got me wondering, what would my dad do if he were in charge of the country and the country came home with an infrastructure report card that bore an uncanny resemblance to my eighth grade report card?
And that's exactly what the American Society of Civil Engineers gave our country.
And what makes it even worse is I'm not even sure who to blame. See, that's the part that would really drive my father crazy. The people that we feature on this show, they work really hard. The people who tend to our infrastructure, they're really smart. They're great at what they do. So obviously, hard work alone isn't going to be the solution. So what's really the problem? Maybe the better question is, what's the poop?
Or better still, where's the poop?
Oh.
On Dirty Jobs, as in life, the answer is everywhere.
Ow.
And our ability to clean it up is a fundamental part of what makes us civilized. That's why we honor guys like Les Swanson. Without Les, the septic tanks and pumping stations in Madison, Wisconsin, would be even less hospitable than they already are.
Damn it!
Whether you're pumping out our porta potties in Alaska or connecting our pipes with Don Brewer in Oklahoma, if you deal with number two, here on Dirty Jobs, you're number one. And that includes our good friends in Rifle, Colorado. Municipal pumping stations help keep sewage flowing to its final destination. Now, most people wouldn't think of a pumping station as a place to get muffins, but this little shop on the outskirts of town serves them up fresh every day.
Look at that. Well, that's terrible. There's your monster.
There's your muffin monster, yep.
The muffin monster uses a conveyor system to separate raw sewage into solids and liquids. From down below, the solids are brought here, where the monster chews them up and turns them into super concentrated muffins.
So this is the muffin?
That's the muffin.
What do you do with these?
It gets buried, landfill.
If Dave doesn't keep the monster clean, the citizens of Rifle might have to deal with muffins of a different kind. The muffin monster is really the perfect metaphor for the entire infrastructure problem. Toilets just keep flushing.
We gotta turn the other pump on, the whole thing's backing up.
Metal just keeps rusting. Erosion never stops. In other words, technology can bake the muffins, but it takes people to clean the oven.
We're gonna die!
How much time do we have before the whole town just blows up?
We continue the journey of poo in one of the most beautiful cities on earth, San Francisco. Even under the streets of San Francisco, The view will take your breath away.
Ah, dozens, miles and miles of sewers down here.
This 900-mile network of sewers is over 100 years old. If it's not continuously inspected and maintained, a sewer line could cave in, causing the street above it to collapse, and the city would be overrun with cockroaches, rodents, and waste. Every day, Gene Cruz and thousands of guys like him inspect and repair millions of miles of sewer infrastructure while you and I go about our business up in the clean, fresh air. A network of strategically placed underground cameras and leak sensors could go a long way to give these guys early warning of potential problems. But for now, they got to keep hoofing it.
You know, you have mortar missing. What's your biggest fear?
You know, cave-in is what I would worry about.
After you find the problem, you got to fix it.
I am sealing roaches for an eternity in between the holes of these bricks, which need to be constantly filled in. Otherwise, well, the sewers will collapse, the city will go bankrupt, and a lot of honest men and women will be out of work forever.
Just a few miles away, you'll find one of two wastewater treatment plants in San Francisco, the end of the line for everything in the city's sewers. It processes 43 million gallons of raw sewage every single day. My guide through this monstrous palace of poo is Chuck Copeland.
What's on the other side of the door?
Sewage, raw sewage.
What is our job today?
Replacing a lift pump. It's a 300 horse, 25 million gallon a day pump that feeds the Oceanside plant treatment plant.
What does the lift pump lift?
Wastewater.
That's bad. That's as bad as anything I've ever seen in my adult life.
Stand back, everybody.
During the time a lift pump is being replaced, the facility has to be shut down, so every minute is critical. Toilets are still flushing on the west side.
Welcome to hell.
And sewage continues to enter the plant. This is truly the ultimate infrastructure battlefield in the heroic effort to control poo and keep it moving.
Good.
All right.
Chuck and the rest of his crew here fight the good fight for the people of San Francisco 24/7. That includes making sure the plant is mechanically sound in every step of the process.
Well, it's a whole lot cleaner than it was. But you can't get everything.
Despite all the efforts of our hardworking wastewater foot soldiers, we still have to deal with the painfully unfortunate consequences when our infrastructure fails. Mrs. Frazier is an infrastructure student. Her house is where she's getting an education. And the harsh realities of an infrastructure breakdown. And the men of the Omega Company, Carl, Greg, Frank, and company owner Gary, will be team teaching.
Okay, let me show you what we get.
Today's subject, city sewer infrastructure breakdown.
But let's team in basement.
Would have been a good day to play hooky.
What in the heck happened?
The whole thing backed up.
Her basement is full of the entire neighborhood's
sewage. You have that much sewage, it means that it comes from the street, the city line.
Oh,
and that's what happened.
God, we got some work to do.
Got some work to do.
On the front lines of the battle with the infrastructure, you bring out the heavy artillery.
We're not going to a garden, are we?
No.
There's a million miles of sewer pipe in this country, carrying 50 trillion gallons of raw sewage every day to different treatment plants. If that network of pipes isn't constantly inspected, maintained, and upgraded, well, the poo has to go somewhere. Every year, sewage pollution costs billions of dollars in property damage, medical treatments, and lost productivity. Without professional teams like the Omega guys, we'd be in over our heads.
Now, see, that's way too much toilet paper. Like a giant mixing bowl from hell.
Yeah, that was disgusting. I admit it. But you had to see it, because
when it comes to our infrastructure, nothing's more important than what we do with our wastewater. And when it comes to Mrs. Frazier, you remember Mrs. Frazier and her exploding toilet. Isn't she kind of like a metaphor for all of us? We're just trying to get through the day, right? Never really understanding how vulnerable we are to the second law of thermodynamics that even as we speak is rendering our subterranean world of pipes into some minefield of random calamity and poopy disappointment. Aren't we all just seconds away from our own exploding toilet and our own basements full of our neighbor's caca?
The next class is about to begin. But I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that when it comes to wastewater, we are up to our waist in D-minus.
Coming up, 60 feet underground, I scramble to save interstate commerce.
Holy smokes.
Before I'm carried out to sea.
That'd be bad.
And later.
Holy crap, we're way up in the air, man.
When you wrangle wires that carry 40,000 volts, you can't afford to be clumsy.
What was that?
I mentioned before that I spent a fair amount of time in the eighth grade in detention, and it's true. What can I tell you? I was told I was a bit of a smart aleck. But here's the crazy thing. You know where they sent us for detention when I was in the eighth grade? The library. What's that all about? I mean, think. I learned from the tender age of 14 to begin equating knowledge and learning with punishment and retribution and sanction and malfeasance. What kind of message is that to send to a 14-year-old kid? Is it any wonder I brought home D's? Sounds like an excuse, doesn't it? That's what my dad said. Yeah, which brings me to our infrastructure report card entitled Inland Waterways. How do you think we did, Dad? I'll give you a dint.
If our country is a body, our inland waterways would be the circulatory system. And like a clogged vein, our waterways need a good cleaning. Who's doing the work? Well, I could tell you about the fellows at Cash's Scrapyard in St. Louis, Missouri, who let me help them remove a sunken barge from the mighty Mississippi and cut it up into tiny pieces. Or there's Joe Resser, who pulls seaweed out of the Great Lakes in Put-in Bay, Ohio, so boats can navigate more safely. Or there's always Dave Ferrillo, who replaces moorings at the bottom of Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. But like so much of our infrastructure, the real struggle goes on underneath the surface, where the action is hard to see and the work is even harder to do. 12,000 miles of navigable waterways serve 41 states in the U.S., providing vital economic and strategic resources. But during tropical storms or hurricanes, our inland waterways can be a liability instead of an asset, as in the case of Hurricane Katrina. This movable water barrier in Stamford, Connecticut, protects the city in case of high tides that can cause flooding.
Yeah, normally it's on the ocean floor. Boats pass right over it. During tidal surges, we'll raise the gate, and we protect about 600 acres inside the harbor. We're going to be washing it out, changing zinc anodes. These anodes emit a small charge, which the corrosion essentially attacks the zinc instead of attacking the gate and rusting the gate out.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has to diligently stay on top of corrosion protection of the barrier to keep it operational. I'll be squirming through a labyrinth of chambers with Diana, an ex-park ranger who used to protect forests. She now protects cities. Every compartment has six anodes, one on the ceiling, one on the floor, and one on each of the four walls.
How do you know when one of these anodes is ready to be replaced?
You have to do an estimate. You kind of look at the percentage of what you think is left.
So when do you replace them?
Below 50.
Below 50.
Yeah.
All right. 70%. 85%.
Yep.
It's a grimy, cold, muddy job battling seawater corrosion, but it's all part of the day's work for the Army Corps of Engineers.
Nice work. That should last us about 5 years.
Located on St. Mary's River between Canada and the United States, the Sioux Locks connect Lake Superior with Lake Huron. They're some of the busiest locks in the world, with 4,500 cargo vessels passing through them every year. Many of the 257 locks still in use in the U.S. are far older than their design life of 50 years. Their age and deterioration poses a serious threat to our economy and our national security. Every winter, while the Sioux Locks are shut down, critical underground cleaning and maintenance is going on. The locks are filled and emptied through huge underground ports that can fill up with debris from Lake Superior. If the debris isn't cleaned out, it could shut down the locks.
So this is just an accumulation of snow
and debris.
Every few years, Bill Campbell and his crew clear 5 to 10 tons of debris out of these laterals, one bucket at a time.
You're amazed sometimes what you find down here, camera, purses, you name it. You've even had a boat sucked in down here before.
Anybody in it?
No.
Wintertime dewatering and maintenance creates huge headaches and expense. Ideally, an additional lock will be built someday to both facilitate summertime repairs and also to make sure cargo keeps moving through the locks in case of a major breakdown. I thought the lateral ports were the belly of the beast. I wasn't even close.
Holy smokes. All this is underwater.
Yes, sir. It's underwater right to the top of the stairs, sir.
Deep well pumps are used to pump water out of the locks. These cavernous chambers also get a lot of lake bottom debris that could shut down the pumps if it's not cleaned up.
How high does the water get when you still work?
Up to our chest.
And if you didn't clean it out, of course, it'd just fill the whole thing.
Well, that's the thing.
That'd be bad.
It's hard to believe that out-of-control debris in this subterranean tunnel could actually shut down interstate commerce, but it could.
Up on the load!
So literally, one bucket at a time.
Yes, sir.
Day after day, week after week.
Infrastructure report card, inland waterways. Are you ready for it? D-minus. You know what that means, right? That's worse than a D. And you know what a D is? According to Webster's, says it right here, D, fourth letter of the English alphabet, the keynote of D major or D minor in music, and in grade school, when used in the context of a report card, slang for sucky. Shh. Sorry. Sucky.
The Army Corps of Engineers maintains and operates the Inland Waterway System, which includes 257 lock systems that move 2.2 billion tons of commerce annually. The busiest lock is the Ohio River Lock Number 52 in Illinois, which moves about 96 million metric tons of goods every year.
The only class I really did well in back in the eighth grade was phys ed. And even then, I didn't do that great. It's not like I'm a fabulous basketball player. It's just that I was surrounded in that particular year by the most amazing group of social misfits in the history of junior high. All I really had to do was show up, and I got a B minus for my trouble. Now, my father was not particularly impressed with my commitment to phys ed, nor was he blown away by my B minus, and he expressed his disapproval by beating me at basketball. Badly. It was a valuable lesson in the transference of energy, which brings me to our next topic on the infrastructure report card. It's our energy grid, and I don't even have to open it to tell you that it ain't pretty.
Demand for electricity has grown by 25% since 1990. And by 2030, electricity use is expected to increase another 29%. Unfortunately, our current energy grid is ill-prepared to handle the increased demand. On Dirty Jobs, we've been in a lot of mines. Randy Rothamel and his crew in northeast Pennsylvania mine anthracite coal. Coal-burning plants provide about half of the electricity generated in this country. But at some point, increasingly more efficient generation, transmission, and distribution systems will need to be added if we want to share the load. The crew from Watson Well Drilling in Tennessee also gets energy from the earth by tapping its natural geothermal resources. It's a clean, efficient way to provide heat for buildings. And we've met some innovators, too, like Bruce Barber in Washington, who's pioneering ways to use biodiesel, and Chuck Magic and his crew, who maintain an electricity-generating wind farm in Oklahoma. All these new and alternative sources work together to help take the strain off our aging energy infrastructure. But until these sources develop a real foothold or have a highway to the grid, we'll have to rely on the structures already in place. Hydroelectric dams generate about 12% of the power in this country, but the average age of our 85,000 dams is 50 years old, as is the age of the Rocky Reach Dam in Wenatchee, Washington, which supplies power to 7 million homes in the Pacific Northwest. To keep the 11 hydraulic turbines spinning and producing power, the 2,200 gallons of oil each turbine contains has to be replaced every few years. We're going below to the bottommost part of the turbine where the blades are.
Behind those gates right there, where the water is leaking in, is the bottom of the river.
Basically crawling down a blade over top of water, building a scaffold in midair without a harness.
It's safer to fall in the water than it is to hang down there until we can get you out.
Well,
Well, there you go.
Not so bad, huh?
Not so good.
Servicing these turbines is a dangerous job and requires custom-built floating scaffolding.
That's very sporty.
Without this brave, dedicated team of mechanics doing what they do, millions of people would be tragically denied the pleasure of watching our show. A remarkably small, shaky platform will be our working area.
Crap.
You're all right. Come on down. There you go. This is the cap we're going to pull off right here. Uh-huh. Hey, don't spill it. It's nasty. That thread's under there.
Oh, this is super convenient, too. Look at that.
Sure. All right.
What's this weigh, like 90 pounds?
This is good.
Give or take.
Turn it on.
We're not pumping today.
So we're all good.
It's all working.
We're going to pump it tomorrow morning.
Just out of curiosity, why don't you do it now?
End of the day. It's going
to
take...
Oh, it's time to go home?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I think you're off the hook.
If you're done, I'm done. I love it.
The U.S. has three major grids that electricity is delivered through. But there are also more than 900 smaller electric utility cooperatives throughout the country, like Carbon Power and Light in Wyoming. They deliver electricity through lines that often take power to remote areas. Here at 8,300 feet, severe weather takes a toll on timber poles that need to be replaced with metal ones.
So 12 guys, Kelby, basically?
Yep.
Taking care of 4,500 square miles?
Yep.
You're superheroes.
Dave Cuthbert and his crew replace about 3 wood poles a week.
Holy crap, we're way up in the air, man.
If even one pole goes down in these isolated rural areas, it can leave a lot of customers in a dangerous situation.
This is exhausting, man.
This is something you get used to. Mm-hmm.
Besides upgrading poles, there's also a real need here and all over the country for new transmission lines to ease the strain on lines that are overloaded or already at capacity. As the demand for power grows at unprecedented rates, there's an imminent danger of demand outstripping supply. When that happens, blackouts occur, shutting down transportation, drinking water and sewage systems, interrupting manufacturing. It can even disrupt some emergency communications.
So how do you get the little grips in there?
You'll have to screw them in.
You screw them in on the way up? Why didn't we do that when it was lying down here?
Too easy.
Too easy.
There isn't any spiked boot punishment with the metal pole, just foot peg installation punishment.
Is that going the wrong way?
It'll take forever.
A 30-foot metal pole requires the installation of 18 foot pegs.
Lift the wire, put it up on the spool there, Mike.
Yeah, like that?
Yeah.
All right. What was that?
You do this in 0 degrees, huh?
Yes, sir.
You got big ones, PJ. All right, pole's got to come down. This is now officially obsolete.
Until newer, more localized forms of alternative energy get perfected, we have linemen to thank every time we flip on a switch.
The American Society of Civil Engineers has evaluated our energy grid and awarded us a D+. Not good. But no comprehensive evaluation of an energy policy would be complete unless we also took a look at new energy.
But a grade for new energy might be just a bit out of our reach for the time being.
Hopefully, that examination will not only heighten our overall infrastructure grade, but illustrate a new commitment to go just a little further to achieve that which must be done.
Coming up.
Oh, yeah, a lot of power.
A beautiful city has an avalanche of solid waste.
Oh!
And a river of revolting refuse.
I feel like a little tiny person that has gone into an actual garbage disposal.
And later.
Is there a worse job on the whole bridge than this?
Saving bridges from the ravages of rust.
Holy. How high are we again?
200 feet.
One death walk at a time.
Ah, the boys' room. This brings back some memories. 1976. It involves me walking in here, looking around at all the trash and the milk cartons. Why were there milk cartons on the floor? Because we were pigs. But the point is, I used to love to pop these things, because in a place like this, the acoustics are fabulous. So I walked up to the milk carton, gave it some of that. It was loud. It was so loud that a scream came out of a bathroom stall, followed by one Steve Libinati with his pants down smoking a cigarette. I've known Steve for years, but I really didn't know he was in there. And he looked at me and said, what was that? And I said, well, I popped one of these milk cartons. And he said, man, I would love to do that. Hold my cigarette. So he hands me his cigarette, and against my better judgment, I take it. He approaches the milk carton, and that one was real loud. And as soon as he did that, through this door back here comes Mr. Royston. Mr. Royston was the principal in my junior high, and on his face was an expression that only a principal could have. And what he said to me in that moment, as he looked at me and saw my feet covered with spoiled milk and a smoldering cigarette in my hand, I will never forget. He said, Mike Rowe, what a waste. Which brings me to my next point. Solid waste is not the same as wastewater. And hazardous waste is not the same as solid waste, but together they are both an integral part of our crumbling infrastructure. One might be tempted to call wasted.
Since 1986, the number of landfills in the U.S. has decreased by 79%, with the remaining facilities expected to last only 20 more years. New, innovative solutions are needed to dispose of our waste. Our friends at Recology in San Francisco are working to raise the bar for waste management every day.
Pick it up one swing.
Who could forget LJ3, who let me try and keep up while collecting food waste in Chinatown? Or Dora, who removes old, dry-docked toilets, recycling them for building materials. And then there's Usman, who collects unwanted paint, recycling what he can and safely disposing of the rest. But no matter what you throw out in San Francisco, it comes here first.
You're Raul, right?
Yeah.
Mike.
How you doing, Mike? My job here is to compact the garbage so we can get enough weight in the trucks and just keep the whole transfer station moving.
Keep it kind of level.
Yeah.
Every day, 2,200 tons of garbage from the Bay Area comes into this station alone. Recology is working to design enough recycling facilities to get the city to a zero waste point and no longer use landfills.
Oh, yeah, a lot of power.
About 300 million tons of garbage are created nationwide every year, and about a third of that is recycled or composted. Some of it's burned in waste-to-energy plants, and about 50% is sent to landfills. That's where this truck is headed. Kind of wish that's where I was going, but I'm headed to the pit. The pit is where runoff from the trucks goes.
Oh!
I feel like a little tiny person that has gone into an actual garbage disposal.
The job down here is fixing a pump that's got everything backed up, which is kind of like the solid waste infrastructure. As the population increases, if critical improvements, workers, and resources aren't continuously applied to the entire system, we could all end up standing hip deep in something very unpleasant. The only thing worse would be standing in something that's classified as very hazardous. It's estimated that about 3 billion consumer electronics products will be scrapped in the next decade, and about a third of all computers ever sold remain stockpiled, awaiting disposal. Enter Sims Recycling Solutions in Roseville, California. They process over 30 million pounds a year of these formerly latest and greatest things, much of which gets recycled, saving tens of millions of cubic feet in landfills. And it ensures that any hazardous materials inside the devices are disposed of responsibly. Robert's going to show me how to get some things ready for recycling. In other words, we're going to tear some stuff apart.
Right?
And then your TV's all ready.
So you got different bins over here for just about everything.
Pretty much. There's a lot of precious metals in these things.
What kind of precious metals?
Aluminum, copper.
At the current rate of consumer electronics growth and obsolescence, there are not enough facilities like this to keep up. A lot more places like Sims Recycling are going to have to be built.
This is the best relationship I've ever had with technology.
Wow.
I really feel like I'm giving it back.
Hey.
How many nights have I sat there looking at these things and not knowing how anything works? Can't download my stupid songs.
Hey, it's hey Mike.
Sits there blinking at me, mocking me.
Now you know
who's
why.
Who's mocking who now? It's funny how the excuse machine kicks in
when you're walking to the principal's office. You know, the way your mind searches for any kind of explanation to get you out of whatever mess you happen to find yourself in. Say, for instance, you're in the hazardous waste business. Perhaps your mind is racing to explain this. Another D. Of course, if you're in the solid waste business, cause for celebration. Yeah, typically a C-plus is not the kind of grade you'd put in a frame and hang over your desk, but in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, and the C-plus just happens to be the very highest grade on the infrastructure report card. Perhaps flushed with victory, you look around for some sort of celebratory gesture and spy a golf cart that some irresponsible adult left unattended, and you think to yourself, why not celebrate with the joyride? I mean, what the heck? If you're heading to the principal's office, might as well arrive in style.
Coming up.
I'm actually out on a highway operating a bulldozer.
Making better, safer roads.
Now open it up. That's good. Oh, jeez.
Can kick you right in the asphalt.
That could have been bad.
Modern conveyance, the business of getting from point A to point B. It's an essential element to any healthy infrastructure or civilized society. Believing otherwise makes about as much sense as stealing a golf cart and driving it to the principal's office. Of course, when you're in the eighth grade, you're young and dumb and you do stupid stuff. As you get older, though, and become more dependent on a highly modernized network of roads and bridges and railways and runways and whatnot, surely at that point, you're going to make better choices. Right? Yeah. I'm going in.
Spanning the Straits of Mackinac in Michigan, the Mighty Mack is one of the 10 longest suspension bridges in the world. While the Mackinac Bridge is in excellent condition, more than 1 in 4 of the country's bridges have been described as structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. Traffic congestion, detours, closures, or even collapses can occur if bridges aren't sufficiently upgraded or maintained. Here at the Mackinac Bridge, constant exposure to high winds and moisture requires that the maintenance never stops. I'm heading down one of the 200-foot towers to clean up rust and paint steel. A guy named Stan is supposed to be down here somewhere.
Are you Stan?
Not working in that cell right there at the bottom.
That's horrible.
Like most maintenance tasks on the bridge, if the steel in the towers isn't stripped and repainted often, it'll rust, become structurally compromised.
Is there a worse job on the whole bridge than this?
It's a job that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Without guys like Stan doing jobs that need to be done, we'd all be taking boats across the Straits of Mackinac.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a terrible job you got here, man.
That's all right. We enjoy it.
Bridge maintenance is continuous, from the very bottom all the way up to the very top, which is where I'm heading to replace some light bulbs.
Holy. How high are we again?
200 feet. A Girl Scout with a monkey merit badge could do this.
There are 96 cable lights on the bridge, as well as lights on the very top of the towers. They're not just decorative. They alert aircraft to where the cables and towers are.
You're doing really good.
Thanks.
The Mackinac Bridge people do a top-notch job, but with the nationwide critical need for retrofitting and replacement, the American Society of Civil Engineers has given our country's bridge infrastructure a mediocre C.
We are on.
Congratulations.
That was big.
About 1/3 of the 4 million miles of roads in our country are in poor or mediocre condition. A poor road infrastructure leads to accidents, delays, congestion, wasted fuel consumption, not to mention wear and tear on vehicles.
I'm actually out on a highway operating a bulldozer in traffic.
94% of our highways are paved with asphalt. I'm joining Benny Shamp and his crew from Werner Construction in western Nebraska, paving an asphalt road that takes a beating from the brutal freeze-thaw cycle of minus 30-degree winters and 100-degree summers.
Now we'll go get the broom tractor.
The broom tractor.
Come over this way.
There's maybe a zillion steps to paving a highway, and to get all those steps done before sundown, Benny keeps the pressure on.
Okay, doctor. Now
what? Lay asphalt now.
Okay.
The asphalt gets dumped by one truck, then picked up by another machine, then laid down by the same machine that picked it up.
Okay, now open it up. That good? Oh, boy.
Once the mixture is on the ground, the clock begins to tick.
Slow down!
Quick, right?
The crew has 15 minutes to get it poured, laid down, and rolled.
There's a lot going on right now. A lot going on. We just might pave an audio guy before the day is over.
Oh, jeez.
That could have been bad.
In the next 8 months, Ben and his crew will pave 600 miles of roads with 865,000 tons of asphalt. Then it probably won't be too long till they start all over again.
Clear up as far as it'll go. And you're paving.
In Germany, they're using a multi-layered rock asphalt and concrete paving process that's incredibly durable and long-lasting. The Germans probably would have avoided the D-minus we got in this country for overall road conditions. Although companies like Werner are using new technologies to make our roads safer and more durable, their work will never stop because people will always want to travel wherever the road will take them.
You get the idea?
It's estimated the federal highway system will have to double in the next 50 years. Without a whole lot more paving crews, we're going to be in for some monster traffic jams. So the next time you pass a road crew, tip your hat to the folks who work hard for your safety, turning asphalt into a finely paved work of art. Coming up.
We're going to be working on this tie right here.
Will there be dancing?
No dancing.
Gandhi dancing doesn't sound like a manly job.
Do they have to do that?
But it takes big studs.
That's a lot of wood.
To keep a train on its tracks.
Out of my way, sinners.
Every bit as important as keeping highways maintained is keeping airport runways in good condition. Poorly marked and maintained runways lead to incursions, incidents involving the incorrect presence of airplanes, people, or vehicles that create a collision hazard for a plane that's either taking off or landing.
The plane I hear landing is looking down at the runway at your paint job.
All the touchdown bars, aiming points, anything that's going to guide that plane in so he knows exactly where he needs to be as he's coming down.
So you're the reason the pilot's able to land, and in a civilized manner, we can all get off the plane alive and go about our business.
Correct. This is our paint carriage. We can paint up to a 36-inch wide pattern on it, and we can paint all the way down to a 4-inch line off of one gun. Well, this is our wash bay. We tend to use high-pressure washers to wash out some of the paint. First, we're going to be taking off these paint filters.
Phil and Kevin operate this truck. Maintaining it may seem pretty routine and ordinary, but the lives of thousands of passengers and crew members depend on the job this vehicle does every day. It's a critical part of aviation infrastructure in every single airport.
Don't you love that?
Okay, what we got here is obviously some dried up crusty paint on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start by using putty knives to try to scrape what we can off, any excess that we
sure.
can. Good job.
The outdated air traffic control system, among other things, gives aviation an overall grade of D.
Can you still see what you're doing, Mike?
Not a thing. Thanks.
In Phil and Kevin's world, the stakes are high. Innovations in runway marking durability will hopefully make runways everywhere a whole lot safer.
This here ends up in a holding tank at the bottom of the wash bay, which we will inevitably have to clean out now that we've cleaned this paint truck into it.
You should think about not calling me when that happens.
Really?
Trains have been and still are the backbone of this country. About 43% of everything in a typical home has been on a train at one time or another. Around 70% of domestically manufactured vehicles are transported by rail, as well as nearly 70% of the coal that's used in power plants. One of the ways to make sure the country's rail infrastructure is in tip-top shape is to use crews called Gandhi dancers. Shane Grump will be my dance instructor today.
We're going to be working on this tie right here, and you can see the end's all frayed out, and it's just in bad condition.
Do we repair the tie, or do we replace the
tie? We replace it.
Will there be dancing?
No dancing.
Some of the 200,000-plus miles of rails in this country are 30 years old, considering the estimate that by the year 2035, there'll be an 88% increase in tonnage traveling on them. The Gandy Dancer's job is critical for people who like their cars delivered on time.
So the next process is to remove the ballast between the ties.
The ballast, this stuff.
It keeps the ties from moving and it stabilizes the railroad track.
There are over a billion of these cross ties in today's rail system, and this is one of the ways they're replaced. It's tedious, back-breaking manual labor. These guys do it every day.
Do they have to do that? You know, if they cared, they could slow down, hop out, pick up a shovel, make an honest day's wage. No, they're all busy delivering freight.
Yeah.
Heavy.
New ones weigh on average probably 300 pounds.
That's a lot of wood.
Time to install the new ties.
Oh, no, you're not going to tell me this is our hammer.
You can use a big end.
Uh-oh. Whoops. Anything else to do?
Well, just a test.
The test?
This would be the test that Shane's talking about.
The need for improvements to rail networks and systems, signaling technology, and heavier rails are all reasons why the American Society of Civil Engineers gave our rail system a C-. And with constantly increasing traffic and heavier freight loads, crews like the Gandy Dancers have their work cut out for them.
Blow your horn a little bit.
Out of my way, sinners. Is there anything more annoying than having someone spell out a metaphor? Probably not, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because as my junior high school principal explained to me those many years ago, on the day I stole the golf cart, son, the stakes are high and your future is on the line. So, metaphorically speaking, I have come to the principal's office today because I would rather be here than in Mrs. Frazier's basement, waiting for my toilet to explode. I am in the principal's office today because I'd rather be here waiting to get my wrist slapped than I would sitting on an airplane waiting to taxi down a runway that might have some potholes in it, or sitting in my car waiting to cross a bridge that hadn't been inspected for decades, or living on the wrong side of a crumbling levee waiting for the next hurricane to come up the coast. I'm here in the principal's office because this report card is our report card. This grade is our grade, and I have no idea how to make it better. I can tell you that the people we feature on Dirty Jobs are not a part of the problem. In fact, those are people who prove that hard work and diligence are not enough to get that grade up. And we're talking about our infrastructure. This is our ability to compete internationally. This is our economy. This is national defense. Kind of a big deal. Anyhow, I don't know what the answer is, but the American Society of Civil Engineers says we need $2.2 trillion to make it better. I don't have $2.2 trillion, and I don't know where to find it. I just figure if we don't start talking about it soon, we're going to be having this same conversation in detention. And I'd hate to see you there. Slang for sucky. Dave, what's the sound we make when I say sucky?
Oh, shh.
Good.
Sorry.
One line. Not even a line. Just a sound.